going to call to order a regular meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, August 1st, 2011. Would you all please rise with us and have a moment of silence for a loved one that has recently passed, and we then remain standing for our flag salute. Thank you. Councilmember Molnar would like to address the pledge tonight.
Oh, yes. Right hand over your heart. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover closed session announcements?
Certainly. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. On Monday, July 18th, the City Council met in closed session on one item, and that was existing litigation, the case of Sipple versus City of Alameda. The council convened into open session without any reportable actions.
Thank you, City Attorney. Agenda review. This is the point in which the council reviews the agenda that's presented by staff and decides if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
No.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I second.
Great. There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So for anyone following along, we will take the agenda as presented by staff and written. I believe there are extra copies in the back of the room. So let's move on to our ceremonial calendars. We have one item this evening, and this is an APWA Public Works Project of the Year Award for the West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project. So, Brandon.
Sir. Good evening, Mayor, Council. My name is Brandon Medeiros, and I have Don Drews here, Principal. From Rick Engineering. The West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project has been awarded the American Public Works Association Central Coast Chapter Project of the Year for a transportation project valued at less than $2 million. This prestigious award recognizes the partnership between the managing agency, the consultant, architect, engineer, and the contractor who, working together, complete significant public works project. This award honors City of Grover Beach, Rick Engineering, and Sousa Construction. Located on West Grand Avenue between 2nd and 4th Streets, the streetscape enhancements project involved installing new enhanced sidewalks, decorative pedestrian crosswalks, traffic calming bulb outs, statement palm trees, landscape medians, ornamental plantings, ornate street light fixtures, and community site furnishings. The City of Grover Beach completed the West Grand Avenue enhancement project in August of 2010. The vision of this ambitious streetscape project was to transform the west end of West Grand Avenue into a distinct city gateway and to create an attractive streetscape between the downtown core and the beach. The project has not only set a precedence for future streetscapes along West Grand Avenue, but also has developed a brand image, improving the public realm and gathering places for the community, businesses, and visitors to the City of Grover Beach. It is an honor to present this American Public Works Association Project Award to the City of Grover Beach.
Go get it.
Very
good. I'll come around to you. Well, thank you, Brandon and Don, and we do want to say it was our pleasure in partnering with you. You guys came up with a great design, I think, that captured the council's vision, and I can tell you, and I'm sure my colleagues would agree, there are numerous members of our community who have made positive statements about the changes made down on that west end of Grand. So thank you for your work on that, and thank city staff as well. So I don't know if any of my colleagues have any comments they'd like to make.
I do.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yes, I would like to say I have had a lot of people
comment about that project, and every single comment has been very positive. It has been well received, and I think it's great that we've had this honor, because it certainly is well deserved from the engineering, the construction, all of the people that worked on that outstanding job. We do appreciate it.
That redevelopment is meant to be for remodeling, not paycheck, not spending. And that has to stop. And I've been around a little while, but tonight I think you should take a $75,000 cut, and a city attorney, because he has another job, I hear. And so,
John, please direct your comments to us.
Okay. Well, $10,000 not enough, and I don't think it's fair for the employees to have to take a 7-8% cut, because I think they were scared into doing it, because these people got $500,000 here. Now, you know, as a mayor, and you work for a big company, that you should not be $800,000 in debt. So tonight, there's $300,500 to the state of California for a permit. Then there's $30,000 a year, if not more money, but no street repairs. Cost to the taxpayers a percentage if the beachfront hotel is not rented out. So tonight, I'm getting down to the bottom of this. Poor business, taxpayers having to pay for this, income people that don't have money, paycheck to paycheck, and you're allowing this to happen, then tonight you're going to terminate him, no rehire, and no money. And I'm going to do the same to you. I demand that you and the mayor pro tem are resigning for the people of Grover and the taxpayers, because this is not right. We don't have to be this way. And I know business. I work for a big corporation myself, and I've never had, it's been tough times, y'all, tough times now. But I demand that you and your mayor pro tem resign. We've had enough. We don't need any more of this nonsense.
Thank you, John. Is there anyone else?
No, this is our first.
Grover Beach City Council, good evening. Nice to see you tonight again. Thanks for having us come down and do public comment. We certainly, Jeff Pinack, Surfrider Foundation, and resident of Oceano, part of the triumvirate of the sewer district here in our South County. The first thing that I want to just talk about tonight, I'm going to kind of review a couple things. For all you TV viewers and people out there that are listening, you've seen the sewage spill was likely preventable article in the Tribune from June 3rd. Where Mr. Wallace said, quote, "I'm not sure how that happened." There was a valve that was closed when it should have been open. I'm not sure how we have a district administrator and plant engineer who doesn't know how things happen. That really doesn't fly with any of us. And then, of course, the grand jury report came out. Grand jury offends mayor. Of course, the grand jury had a few things to say, and Aura Grandy, Mayor Ferrara, it offended him that there were some accusations of conflict of interest. And I want to read some things from the actual grand jury report right here. It says, quote, "The district administrator's assertion of board approval of Wallace Group charges is misleading. The board approval process does not mitigate the conflict of interest because it is not based on an informed approval." And basically, when we talk about an informed approval, we have three folks that sit on the sanitation district board. Mr. Nichols sits for Grover Beach, Mr. Ferrara for Aurora Grandy, and currently Lori Angelo for OCSD. And it's so difficult, as I said last in one of the meetings here as well, it's difficult for folks who have jobs and serve the public like this in a council to really make informed decisions, because it's so hard to keep track of engineering and things like that. And if you don't get the right answers from the people who are informing you, it's difficult to make a reasonable decision. I'm going to try and get through most of these before my time's up. Consequences of the failure of the board to recognize this conflict of interest. A, a long-term contractual relationship that is never subject to competitive bid or other evaluation enables a continuing conflict of interest that is not mitigated and may result in a too comfortable situation that lacks rigorous oversight and reasonable controls that the district ratepayers deserve. Over the 25-year period of the contract, the district organization may have been molded to conform to the services provided by the district administrator, i.e. John Wallace and the Wallace Group. If the information and
sanitation district meetings over 1 month ago, frankly, necessary changes at the district are obvious to everyone except for the district's board of directors. In my last Grover Beach public comment, I said the board of directors is not qualified to mitigate all the conflicts of interest referenced in the Slo County grand jury findings. I stand by that statement. In watching the board of directors, we are not confident they understand water board expectations. Despite many requests that they speak publicly to the water board's notices of violation, they will not and have not spoke to them. If they can't prove their basic competence about what's already happened on water quality issues, how can we be sure they'll ask critical questions regarding engineering and water quality problems as they emerge? These problems are inevitable. Our plant is almost 50 years old. As we move forward, it is vital that leaders display their understanding of water quality issues, especially if they are representatives who choose to embrace the Wallace Group's logical conflicts of interest and the flawed organizational structure at our plant. Our sanitation district your sanitation district representative vigorously supports the sanitation district's flawed organizational structure. The structure says, if it's not good for the Wallace Group, it won't happen. He has stated false information during these council meetings in support of a flawed structure, a status quo that has led to two whistleblowers, multiple water quality violations, and two sewage spills over 100,000 gallons in the last 2 years. I'm not implying that somebody lied. However, facts are important when they're reported back to the stakeholders' councils. So, as the district, as the sanitation district's board of directors continue to deny their organizational structure is flawed, and unless they can fully demonstrate that they are capable of mitigating all potential conflicts of interest, we are asking this council consider changing their representative on the sanitation district's board of directors. A change in representation will bring new eyes and new solutions to the problems facing our district. It's taken Surfrider almost 6 months to get to this point on this issue. It shouldn't have to be this way. We're here to effect positive change, to bring stakeholders' focus toward water quality issues, and it's unfortunate that it's come down to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Nutt. Is there anyone else?
My name is Robert Reed. Council members, Mayor Scholes, just a quick comment about my take on what's going on West Grand Avenue. I've seen an awful lot of improvement and money poured into West Grand Avenue, and the streets on the city are full of potholes. They paved with a wheelbarrow or a pickup truck with some asphalt in it and a shovel. You practically throw your car out of alignment driving through half of the streets, and then all this money is getting put on the west side of Grand Avenue. And I'll tell you one thing about West Grand Avenue. I've lived here all my life. You're not going to stop the wind from blowing off the water straight down Grand Avenue. It's cold. It's going to always be cold, and it's never going to be a resort. Thanks.
Thank you for those comments.
Good evening. Thank you, Council, for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jennifer Blonder. I'm the secretary for the Surfrider Foundation, our local chapter of Slo Surfrider. I am a teacher and a surfer. And I wanted to speak to the topic of water quality and the issues that we've been having with sewage spills that Brad and Jeff spoke about. I'm just looking around and I see the city of Grover Beach. The word beach is pretty key around here. I mean, it's the center of our community. And I know that everybody in this room respects and understands that there's an issue with sewage in the water. There's spills, and it's something we're all concerned about. As a surfer, I've seen just last week some stuff floating around. It looks like chunky brown applesauce. And I've gotten sick from the water several times, ear infections, throat problems. That's not really what I want to speak about. I want to come from the position of education. I'm an educator, and today, as a matter of fact, I took a surf camp full of 5 kids down to the ocean. And there's nothing more joyful than seeing kids playing with the ocean. You know how when the waves come up, and there's the foam, and they run and try to get away from the foam, and they just love the ocean, you know. And I do too. I'm a surfer, you know, and I want the ocean to be preserved. I don't want things dumped in the ocean. I know nobody here wants things dumped in the ocean. And I know that as a community,
you're aware the city has been dealing with a deficit in the second year of the 2-year budget for probably the last 6 months. The council has provided direction as to how to resolve that budget deficit. And that includes the following. It includes a $120,000 reduction in general fund contributions to the street rehabilitation program. It includes $310,000 in terms of concessions from employees across the board. It includes potential sale of property at $200,000. It includes the use of reserves funds at $197,000, and it includes the conversion of to a less expensive health plan that will net out about $70,000.
Okay, very good. And then if you can just clarify the funding for West Grand Avenue, I think that's really important.
West Grand Avenue was by and large funded through federal dollars. Those included dollars that we competitively sought and received in terms of the stimulus package. The entire cost of the project was roughly $1.5 million. Approximately $1.2 million was in federal sources. The remainder was redevelopment agency funding that was used from increment generated from the project area and put back to redevelop that particular area.
And the federal sources that were used, $1.2 million, came with restrictions that could not be used on the regular city streets.
That's correct. They had to, and they were competitive, as I noted. They had to be used on primarily main thoroughfare, and they had to include pedestrian enhancements, transportation enhancements, and that's how we were successful in getting that project.
Thank you. I just really wanted to, I felt that we should have that information out there so anyone that's in the audience or who is watching understands the nature of the projects and the budget, and we'll be having an item later about budget. So we got that information out there. So let's move on, because I know that there are many here who are here for other items on this agenda. So we're going to move on to our public hearing item. This is item number 2 on the agenda. And this is an appeal of the Planning Commission's denial to construct a second-story addition. And I believe this staff report is going to be given by Ms. Janice.
Before we begin, Honorable Mayor,
yes.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Myself.
And Mayor Pro Tem, for the record, for the reason for recusal.
I live within 500 feet of the home.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's give him some time to vacate the room.
Mr. Mayor, as the Mayor Pro Tem is leaving the room, I would, and by way of introduction, this is an appeal of a Planning Commission decision regarding this particular project. I want to note for the record that the original recommendation from staff was to approve the project. The Planning Commission saw it differently, and the Planning Commission recommendation is coming for you before you tonight. But I wanted to make that clarification.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Reese.
Good evening. On May 10th, 2011, the Planning Commission considered a request for approval of site and architectural plans for a proposed two-story addition on an existing single-story single-family residence. After public testimony and deliberation, the Planning Commission voted to deny the request based on the proposed massing and compatibility with the neighborhood. On June 14th, staff returned to the Commission with a resolution reflecting the May 10th findings and action that applicant has appealed that decision to the City Council. The subject site, located within Phase 1 of the Marbrisa subdivision on North 5th Street, is a relatively level lot in a hillside area with sloped lots and varying pad elevations. The applicant is proposing a 2,700 square foot remodel in addition to the existing 1,500 square foot residence. The remodel in addition would add 477 square feet to the first story and a 2,200 square foot second story level. The project must be consistent with the zoning ordinance regulations. The zoning ordinance requires that the Planning Commission make a determination that the proposed project would not substantially or needlessly obstruct views from adjacent properties. The first appeal considered by the City Council since the land use element policies were adopted last year. Tonight, the City Council will review the action taken by the Planning Commission to deny the addition and adopt a resolution either upholding or overturning the Commission's action. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Okay. Let's see if there's questions. Councilmember Munar.
You based the denial of citing mass in comparison to the adjacent homes only?
Correct.
I find that kind of interesting because I had an opportunity to drive through the area of Marbrisa, and I saw a lot of very large homes next to single-family homes, and I don't really understand where you came to with your findings. And also in other areas of Grover Beach, there are places where there are an extremely large homes being built next to a lot of smaller homes. In fact, I have one across the street from me on Newport, and on either side there are smaller homes. So I really do not agree with your conclusions on the massing.
Mayor, for the record, yes. If I may, the staff is bringing before the council the Planning Commission's decision. This is not staff's decision or staff's findings. This is a decision that was made by the Planning Commission after a public hearing and receiving testimony. And
I apologize. I do not agree with the Planning Commission.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson?
I don't have any questions at this time. Well, maybe I do have one. There's been a lot of discussion of CCNRs.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you can bring us a little bit more insight as to the relationship of the CCNRs and the Planning Commission's decision.
Janet, I think the City Attorney can answer that.
City Attorney?
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Peterson, there was some discussion about the CCNRs during the Planning Commission hearing. Their decision was not based on any of the CCNRs. CCNRs are private development agreements that control the development that they apply to. Most of the speakers at the Planning Commission that were raising the issues with the CCNRs were actually living outside of the area that the CCNRs were applicable.
They may live outside it, but does that make the CCNRs then invalid?
The CCNRs did not have any consideration with regard to the decision, at least none that was stated.
The Planning Commission didn't make the decision based on the CCNRs.
That is correct.
They have to make, so what you're saying is they have to make the decision based on findings?
The decision of the Planning Commission has to be made based upon the land use element, the zoning code. There are necessary findings that need to be made or not made, and based upon the testimony that was received, based upon the presentations, the Planning Commission found that the mass and the size of the building was inconsistent with the immediate neighborhood. And that was, based on staff's observation, the reason for the denial of the project.
Thank you.
Councilmember Wright.
Well, following up on that line, I've read in a couple of places about architectural guidelines that are specific to Marbrisa.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something that was taken into consideration by the Planning Commission?
No. We do have a letter from the Marbrisa Architectural Review Board that states they approved the project, and that's all staff that asked for.
Okay. So. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. No question. No more at this time. Thank you.
Okay. I don't have any questions. Actually, I had a question, and you asked it, so I know there's a lot of folks who would like to address this. So the way we're going to handle this tonight is typically when there's an appeal, the applicant slash appellant in this particular case, I'm going to give 10 minutes to make your presentation. And then once that's done, I will allow the public to talk. I have several speaker request forms here, and I'm going to allow 3 minutes per speaker slip. So at this point, would the applicant slash appellant or representative like to approach the podium?
Yes.
And address the council?
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Mike Holking. I'm at 828 North 5th Street in Grover Beach. Honorable Mayor Scholes, members of the Grover Beach City Council and staff, we are requesting a City Council review and subsequent approval of development permit number 08-018. The following three arguments are the basis of our request. First, the current Marbrisa covenants, conditions, and restrictions, i.e. CC&Rs, which I basically have here in my hand, Article 7.2, pages 21 and 22, makes reference to additions. It says, quote, improvements and exterior changes can only be made upon approval of the architectural committee. The architectural plan for our proposed remodel has been approved by the architectural review committee as required by Marbrisa to create additional depth. The height of our design is consistent with surrounding structures, and the setbacks reduce impact as mandated by the city general plan land use element 20.9. Land use element 3.1, in fact, states that two-story homes are allowed next to one-story homes. I am going to make my best to run here with this device that I don't have much knowledge with, but I've got photos here that I'm going to refer to, this one being photo number one, which shows the remodeled home that would be consistent with character, style, and size of homes in the neighborhood. The design is actually similar, is actually located at 870 North 5th Street. In fact, we hired the same draftsman who designed and built other homes in Marbrisa because they understand the unique architectural character of our neighborhood. There we go. Photos two and then subsequently three show existing precedent of large two-story homes in Marbrisa. In fact, 70% of the homes in Marbrisa are large two-story homes. Photo four shows a one-story home next to a two-story home located on our street.
Honorable Mayor, and I apologize for the interruption. I've been informed that we're having technical difficulties and the audio is actually not going out.
Can you give us 5 minutes?
Would it be agreeable to take a short break to fix that problem?
Yeah. Mike, you're okay with that?
No problem.
Okay. We'll take a 5 minute break.
With the previous statement firmly in mind, I know we are in compliance with all city regulations, all Marbrisa CC&Rs, and have diligently endeavored to mitigate any and all massing and view corridor issues. In summary, it's important to note that none of the residents in Marbrisa have opposed this project.
In fact, nearly every neighbor has either written letters or signed a petition in support of the project. We hope to invest in Grover Beach and stay in the community. Subsequently, we ask for your approval to enhance our home, to fit our family's needs, while further beautifying our neighborhood and, in a larger context, our community. Thank you.
So I understand another member of your team is going to use the remaining balance of your time.
Joe Friagas with the design firm of Santa Coast Drafting. As they're about to outgrow the Block North Fifth Avenue home, this service is hoping retained us to provide a design solution for the remodel in addition to their home that will be well suited to the needs of their growing family. After many schemes, we produced a design subject to the approval of the Mara Brisa Architectural Review Committee. We worked concurrently within the requirements of the City of Grover Beach Planning Department for affected projects within the Grover Heights area. To that effect, our solution complies with the required setbacks, lot coverage, height limits, site, landscape, grading, and drainage requirements, as well as contextual scale and fit considerations. Beyond that, we endeavored by scale and proportion to produce a beautiful and friendly design that respects the neighborhood while meeting its own needs. For example, the second floor at the rear of the elevation is held back approximately an additional 10 feet from the rear of the existing first floor, although not required, as a means of stepping and breaking up the massing. At the front, a low-walled forecourt off the master and adjacent to the entryway nicely breaks up the scale. A lower roof valance across the front of the garage and deeply recessed entry, entryway nicely breaks up the facade and reinforces the horizontal theme of the roof line of the front elevation. A second floor portico inset approximately 7 feet and beautifully proportioned within the three and beautifully proportioned. Likewise, we recommend that the City Council approve these plans. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on that on your team that would like to speak?
My wife, Jennifer.
Hello, good evening. My name is Jennifer Mandalay Polking, 828 North Fifth Street. I wanted to take just a minute to introduce my family. This is my mom, Rita Mandalay. She has a home in Grover Beach, and we purchased that and completely fixed up about 13 years ago. We recently convinced my sister to move to Grover Beach. This is Michelle. She just bought a home on Saratoga Avenue, is completely fixing that up with her daughter, Dee Dee. And these are our daughters here, Jordan and Jaden, the reason why our home no longer fits. We have neighbors like Carla and Delisa and the rest of the team that's been here with us, why we want to stay in the neighborhood. These people are like family to us. We have 39 other people that have signed our petition in our neighborhood in favor of our project, more reason why we want to stay in the neighborhood. In speaking of the issue of massing, I want to reiterate again, there are about 45 homes in Mara Brisa. 70% are large two-story homes. This means our home, as it is right now, is completely out of character in terms of size and appearance with the majority of homes in the neighborhood. More than 70% of the homes in Mara Brisa have tile roofs and are kind of a Spanish design. We invested a great amount of money and time to create plans which would actually match the current look of Mara Brisa. We talked to neighbors. We talked to a number of people in the area to see what they had thought about the plans before we even considered going forward. We spent about 3 years showing people the plans to see what they thought before we got to this point at all. This notice was mailed to all neighbors within 300 feet of our home. The remodeled home would be consistent in height and scale to homes in this area. Where do we draw the line? Where is the neighborhood? The people right behind us have very large two-story homes. We have Mr. Reed's home on 6th Street and Ms. Shower's home on 6th Street as well, both very large mass two-story homes. We've lived in Margarita for 10 years. We've invested a great deal of time to build bonds with our neighbors. Our family is clearly invested in Grover Beach. We now have 3 homes in Grover Beach. And with your approval, we'd like to invest even more in Grover Beach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, excuse me. If you want the photographs to be lodged in the record, can you please provide to the clerk?
I think they are actually in the packet.
Are they, I think they're part of it.
Yeah, why don't you take those and if we have them, we'll make copies to come back for originals. Okay, I have a bunch of speaker request forms, and so I'm going to go down these, and some were here at the last meeting in which we had continued this item. So I'm going to call Anita Shower, followed by Gary Fowler.
Good evening. I'm Anita Shower. I live at 867 North 6th Street in Grover Beach. First of all, the house at 918 that was shown, when that house was built, they didn't want a two-story house. I've lived here long enough that that property behind me, which is now Margarita, was nothing but a field. Charles Bagwell put that development together, just so you know. Phase one was single-family, single-story. Phase two was two-story. That's why 70% of the houses are two-story. That was phase two. We, on 6th Street, are not in the Margarita track. We're in track 123, which is front, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 5th, and 6th Street. We have different CC&Rs, which we must abide by. They are different from the Margarita track CC&Rs. That's for your clarification. I do not know why we are here this evening regarding this house in phase one. It is obvious from the CC&Rs, both renditions, the original dated June 25th, 1982, and the amended and restated CC&Rs that were amended on February 25th, 2011, which were signed by William Nichols as executing the instrument and duly notarized by Council Member Deborah Peterson, that this proposed addition is out of order. Article 7 in the CC&Rs for the Margarita track under use restrictions says the following. Prohibition on additions and restrictions and construction. No building, structure, or improvement shall be erected, altered, placed, or permitted to remain other than single-family dwellings and garages except for buildings for common use and approved by the association. And no such building shall exceed the what results is a disturbing situation that pits one party against the other, resulting in monumental legal fees and years of legal battles. What is required in this situation is the retaining of a civil attorney and one who is authorized in land use and land use elements. I speak from experience. I've been through all this with the city. There are others in this room who have also been through this with the city regarding CC&Rs. The city has no feeling one way or the other about this, and they are not schooled in civil litigation, and to them the only matter at hand is obtaining building fees to put into the city coffers. Many of the photographs the Polkings provided for the surrounding areas are for phase two of Margarita track and track 123 in Grover Beach. The only house in phase two that is a sore thumb is 856 North 5th Street, which resulted in court action many, many years ago because the house was built 10 feet too high. And that was due to the city failing to measure the grade accordingly and failing to measure the foundation. So the city decided they would justify this error by having the party remove the roof, take it down 2 feet, put the roof back on, and so now the house is 8 feet higher than it's supposed to be.
Ms. Shower, I need you to wrap up. I've got a bunch of speakers since.
The party who erred in the situation right now is the Agricultural Review Committee for the Margarita track, informing the applicants that their plans met the criteria set forth
in the regulations governing Phase 1 houses in the Marbrisa Tract. This is far from the truth. The CCNRs clearly state no such building shall exceed the height above ground level specified in the original plans and specifications. Thank you.
Thank you. And did you want to enter your letter into the public record by passing it to the clerk?
Thank you.
Gary Fowler. Mr. Fowler will be followed by Jeffrey August.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm a resident of the city of San Luis Obispo at 777 Mill Street and have been at that location for approximately 45 years. I've known the applicant since he was a little boy, and I worked with his father. I have known his wife since before they were married. This is a family with two children that your community, in my opinion, can be proud to have as neighbors and residents. There are times we all wish we could see no change in our neighborhoods. I have certainly seen a lot of change in mine in San Luis Obispo. I know that the majority of Mike and Jennifer's neighbors inside the gated community look upon their request for remodeling and addition as a necessity for the increase in their family. I know they want to live in this neighborhood and your city for many years to come. Their contribution as a family will give them a chance to contribute to the community through the schools as well as the city as a whole. Recently, in a ruling by the County Board of Supervisors in San Luis Obispo, they gave permission to a builder in Cayucas in favor of much opposition to construct a new and bigger home. They commented, "The community character thing is such a difficult thing to define." They further stated that a lot of subjectivity goes into land use decisions. They then passed on a 4-1 vote the effective way for this person to continue and build their home. We all have to make sacrifices from time to time. In my opinion, the home improvements that they are seeking to make will, in the long run, bring credit, style, and security to this portion of Fifth Street if they are allowed to complete this moderate and stylish. Please don't force a fine family to relocate some of their city in order to provide the needed and necessary expansion for their family. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. Jeffrey August. You did. You went already. Okay, thank you, Jeff. Jeff Downing.
My name is Jeff Downing. I live at 919 North Fifth Street. I feel that I support this renovation for the Polkings. I think it is in character with our neighborhood, and I think it will be a great asset to not just Marbrisa, but to the whole community.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Larry Nystrom.
My name is Larry Nystrom. I live at 829 Pacifica Drive. I want to correct one thing that Mike showed. Mike showed a picture of the last house that Mike showed at 841 Pacifica Drive. Is actually a three-story house. It's not a two-story house. They got by calling the third story the basement, and they didn't dig a hole. So most of our neighborhoods have 3,000 square feet houses. Everything that I wanted to say has already been reiterated. I just want to say these are quality.
Make it more beautiful and enhance the neighborhood that we have already. And then the other consideration is the city. The city is really going to be, the nuts and bolts of this is, the city is going to be denied the taxes and opportunity to increase the value and quality of our city. And finally, so much has been done in this past years to increase the distinction and excellence of the city. Since I came here 7 years ago and since our family was coming, you know, on vacations and so for probably the past 30 years. And it just wouldn't make sense to compromise those ongoing efforts by denying this neighborhood another opportunity to keep that excellence going. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Muller. Barbara Nichols.
My name is Barbara Nichols. I live at 887 North Fifth Street. And I have a problem with the five findings from the Planning Commission. I find them confusing and somewhat contradictory. Finding two states This design is not detrimental to the development of the surrounding area or city because it is in an existing neighborhood with adequate infrastructure. Our homeowners association agrees with that. Finding 3 then states, this project could impair the desirability of investment or occupation in the neighborhood as not consistent with the surrounding single-family residents. In contradiction of this, our homeowners association regularly has residents upgrading their houses and landscaping at considerable investment to them to remain where they love to live. Finding number 1 also considers the design not in keeping with the character and not compatible with existing homes in the neighborhood. This statement is not factual in the view of our homeowner members who signed a petition and wrote letters in support of this project, and many live in Spanish-style multi-level homes. Finding 5 states this second story is not consistent with the land use elements of the general plan of Grover Beach because it is not compatible with existing homes in Marbrisa. In fact, as had been already stated, many of the homes in Marbrisa are split level, 2-story, and even 3-story, with several of those being approved by this city and Planning Commission in the last 5 years. Finding 4 states this addition is not consistent with architectural guidelines and standards for the neighborhood. The Marbrisa Architectural Review Committee, not Agricultural Review, approved this project in June of 2008. A copy of that letter was provided to the planning staff, the Planning Commission, and now to the City Council. If the neighborhood includes all homes in a 300-foot radius around the Polking residence, it also includes countless other homes of 2 stories or more and homes with more square footage. Our family is strong supporters of the Planning Commission, and no one appreciates the time and effort they voluntarily give this community to keep it one of the finest places to live in the Central Coast. But this time, I believe that they got this decision wrong. Please approve this development permit and keep the Polkings in our neighborhood and in our city.
Thank you, Ms. Nichol. Is it Delisa Shonin?
Delisa.
Hi, my name is Delisa Shimon. I live at 810 North 5th Street, and I approve this project. I believe this would be a wonderful asset to our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shimon. I think I had a request from Peter Keith from the last meeting, but I don't believe he's here. So those are all the speaker request forms that I do have. Is there anyone that would like to address the council?
Yeah. Mayor Schultz, council members. I'd like your indulgence for maybe a few minutes beyond my 3 minutes, if I could do that, since we've only had a minimal amount of speaking on the other side of the issue. It shouldn't take a lot longer.
Well, why don't you give your testimony, and we'll see.
And you can cut me off. Okay. Dear souls, council members, this is not about how many names can be collected on a list of people who will be completely unaffected by this project. It's about the people who will be directly affected. This is not about a young family having to either triple the size of their home or move to another city. There is nothing more important to me than my family, but I know no families who have grown so fast or become so large as to require tripling the size of their home. This is deceptive and is just not the issue. It's illusory. This is not about unfairness because just behind and in front are homes that are 2 stories or larger. The homes behind are in a completely different housing tract and have completely different CCNRs which govern. The 2-story homes that are in Marbrisa are on steeper sloping lots that allow for 2 stories without an obtrusive roof height. This is by careful design. Marbrisa tracks CCNRs and architectural standards and mirrors. How many Grover Beach residents require nearly 1,000 square feet apiece to live in? This is about trying to maximize the square footage and placing the most behemoth structure possible on this lot, obtaining an expansive ocean view with no regard for the homeowners whose views it will destroy. It is about trying to subvert the existing rules and law that forbid increasing the roof height in Marbrisa. The Planning Commission looked this plan over and denied it. They saw the obtrusiveness and inappropriateness. I love my family. My wife and I have 3 wonderful children whom we've raised in our home on 6th Street. at the most personal level.
This is about having a big part of their inheritance stolen from them by a party and process that wants to circumvent regulations that are part and parcel to both of these areas. Mayor Scholes, council members, Grover Beach Municipal Code Article 9 empowers and obligates the city to support and stand by whichever provisions of law are most restrictive, be they private or public. In this case, and as it has stood for nearly 30 years, the CCNRs and Phase 1 architectural standards have governance and must be supported. I'm going to read this real quick, if I may.
Okay. I'm going to give you an extra minute. Can you
okay,
can
you do that? The architectural standards are in possession of both the Marbrisa Homeowners Association as well as the applicants for this project. Where are these documents, and why have they not been available for the public and the council to consider? These standards are important, germane, and critical to these meetings. The Marbrisa Phase 1 architectural standards will specify this lot is limited to one story, as were all the lots in Phase 1 except a single lot, which was on a steep grade. I spoke with the president of Marbrisa Homeowners Association, Mayor Pro Tem Bill Nichols, on July 28th this year, and asked if I could have a copy of the Phase 1 architectural standards. His reply was, "They are not a public document, and I will not cooperate and will not provide you a copy." I believe all the relevant information should be put on the table in a public meeting such as this, and the facts should not be shrouded in a cover-up. I can't help but believe that an effort to conceal this pertinent evidence from these meetings is illicit and unethical. The only conclusion I can draw from the efforts to withhold these documents is that someone is trying to do someone else a political favor. These architectural standards belong at these meetings, and they should be available for everyone to examine and consider. It's contemptible to withhold this information.
Somebody's
that is crucial.
Are you almost done?
Yes.
We have a copy of your letter to enter to the record.
Good enough. I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else that has not spoken that would like to address this item?
Good evening, Mayor Scholes and City Council members. My name is Chris Long. I live on Truro Avenue here in Grover Beach. I'm also on the Planning Commission for the City of Grover Beach. I hadn't intended to speak originally, but I wanted to provide a little information for this evening to help you. The decision for the Planning Commission was a difficult one to make. It wasn't easy. I think if you look through the minutes of our meeting, you can see that we wrestled with this decision and where we were going with it. The decision wasn't based on architectural style or view corridors. Rather, we used the land use element policies to guide us through the process. We recognize, of course, that there are R1 and R2 neighborhoods in the city that have incompatible house sizes and inconsistent house sizes. Ultimately, however, the Planning Commission felt that the Marbrisa development had a very unique character unto itself, and that the topography lend itself, obviously, to some homes, the two-story homes, the 70% that were talked about, were on the lower elevations on the slope, whereas the top tier, where the house in question was, they are primarily one-story houses. So ultimately, we felt that that top tier area was unique was unique enough, and that the proposed development was out of character for that particular area. It was difficult because we couldn't really provide any guidance necessarily to the applicant, and I apologize for that. However, it was not obviously a rejection of style or architecture or a second story for that matter. That wasn't what the Planning Commission was saying. Rather, we felt convincingly that the overall size and scale was not in character with the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Long. And
by the CCNRs. The city historically has not judged or determined compliance with the CCNRs. We simply are not an enforcing agency for those documents. We do, in the events, there's been some code section mentioned by some of the speakers. Those code sections are applicable to subdivision development. They're not applicable to this type of a project. When a subdivision under subdivision mapback is constructed and built, the developer may choose to put CCNRs that are more restrictive than the conditions that the city code is. And if that subdivision comes before as a subdivision, not as an individual lot, then decision is made as to whether or not those are more restrictive, less restrictive, and whether they're governed. In this particular situation, it's a single residence. It is not a subdivision. And the provisions of this code were adopted long after the subdivision that is subject to it was put into place.
Okay. Thank you. Let's have some discussion. Councilmember Monar.
There's a lot of talk about Phase 1 and 2. I did read this entire thing because I was trying to find references to height in here in relation to the properties on 6th Street. And nowhere did I find anything other than that the structure should be built downhill. Where is the documentation for Phase 1 and 2? That is not in here. And if it does refer to restrictions on the heights of the houses in certain sections, then we should have been given that. So,
if I may,
yes.
Attachment 7 of the staff report is all the staff reports, minutes, and resolutions I could find on the Marbrisa subdivision.
Okay. So everything we got is what you found?
Mm-hmm.
Is there so...
Again, the documents that are being referenced are documents that are, if they in fact are there, are documents for the homeowners associations. Those are the architectural guidelines or the subdivision guidelines that the architectural review committee considers or doesn't when they approve projects within a subdivision. And this project was approved, and that approval was provided to the city by the architectural review committee in that subdivision.
Okay, so everything we have here, because I see references to archaeological digging, you know, about the streets, about the signs, about the size of the lots, but nowhere in here does it say anything about any particular part of that subdivision has restrictions in terms of height.
7.2. No, no.
No, I understand 7.2.
No, no.
I looked at that. I'm sorry, I know I'm not
hang
supposed
on.
To...
No, you're fine. Please, no comments from the audience. We've closed this to the public, and we're having some discussion here. So,
okay.
Councilmember.
Thank you. 7.2 is part of the CCNRs, is that correct? Okay, I understand that. I'm not referring to the CCNRs. I'm referring to the original agreement, the architectural agreement, the zoning agreement, the land use, the planning, everything that was done at the time in 1982 or 1983, I forget which date it is. And I'm asking, in there, is there anywhere there where there is a height restriction? And I could not find one.
None of the city documents that are applicable to this have a height restriction that I could find either.
Okay. And then what you told us about, city attorney, I don't mean to speak rudely, in terms of the relationship between CCNRs and... the Planning Commission or the city, do CCNRs have precedent? Do they have more legal value than...
Not in this instance.
Okay, because that has to do with... Okay, subdivision, all right. And as pertaining to the land use element, Mr. Long and the Planning Commission, when was the land use element? Can someone tell me that was...
The current version of the land use element was adopted last February.
Last February. Okay.
So February
since that time, there have been large homes that have been built since then, I'm sure. Because I know west of 4th, there's some extremely large homes that have been put in there in the middle of very tiny little homes.
Yes.
Okay.
There have been a few projects that have gone on.
Okay. So I disagree with that interpretation of the land use element in regards to the subdivision. Because what's going to happen is this will set a precedent when it comes to other people who wish to enlarge and remodel their homes. And I think that's kind of a dangerous thing to get into. All right, I think that's basically it. Like I said, I drove through the neighborhood. I saw other homes in there that were extremely large. You drive down 4th, you look at those homes, those are big homes. I mean, I have a 900-square-foot home. I wish I had one that big. So basically, that's all my questions. Thanks.
So I think that these decisions are difficult because we don't want to say no to people improving their homes in the area. And we don't want to say no to people making their homes bigger for family use. However, I think this specific circumstance, in this specific situation, it was carefully planned. It was well planned. It was planned that way for a reason. And I think that it wasn't broke. It was done that way, and it was done well. And it's easy to say, yes, that, well, there's a huge home right above it, and it's true, there is a huge home right above it. But that's on a street where every single home is very different. It's not governed by, maybe subdivision's the wrong word, but it's not governed by a development that's a cohesive development. And I think that most of our city isn't governed by cohesive developments. It is kind of mishmash. It is kind of a custom city with a lot of uniqueness. So in this case, I would support the Planning Commission's decision.
Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions for clarification, please. Are there any two stories in the Phase 1 portion of the Marbrisa development? Do you know?
There might, it was kind of hard to tell. There might be a couple of them. They look kind of one story from the front.
But are they the original structures? Do you know?
I don't know if they're the original structures or not.
Okay.
Each, from what I could tell on when I was trying to do some research, there have been some vacant lots that were built at some point. I didn't find approvals for every single address. I only found a couple of them.
Okay.
So that makes me believe some of them may have been built originally with the track or something, or earlier, and then others came later.
Okay. Thank you. And then I don't know who to direct this question to, but my concern is, I mean, I understand that the city doesn't have authority to enforce or interpret CC&Rs and architectural review or architectural guidelines. However, my concern there is that if this subdivision was approved originally based upon those original CC&Rs and architectural guidelines, then I'd be concerned about us over denying those original I'd be concerned about us going above and beyond what was originally approved at for that subdivision. Have I made any sense at all?
Yes, you have.
Thank you.
If I may, Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Bright, attachment to the staff report, which is the resolution of approval, which is a document that Planner Reese and Councilmember Molnar were discussing. That is the city's approval document for that subdivision. That document does not contain any restrictions with regard to height or how many stories. And that is the document that governs the city's approach to this development.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you. There was one other discrepancy regarding the approval by the Architectural Review Committee. Someone said that it had been approved years ago. Is there a current approval?
It was submitted to the Architectural Board in June of 2008, and then they submitted the plans to the city in September 2008. Staff reviewed the plans shortly thereafter, returned corrections, which is our typical process, and then they resubmitted recently the revised plans.
Okay. So So for our intents and purposes, this project has received all the appropriate and necessary approvals.
Right. Because it comes within a CCN, or within an area that has CCNRs that have architectural guidelines or something like that, we'd ask for a letter from the Homeowners Association or review committee in this case, stating that they would approve the plans before they submit to the city.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's those are all of my questions at this point in time. Thank you.
Okay. So let me have some, I have some comments I wanted to make, and then we'll see if there's someone prepared to make a motion. Along coming here and explaining the discussion that the Planning Commission went through, I completely understand. I think that their decision seemed to be based on narrowly defining the neighborhood as the area that's on the upper tier, whether that's phase one or phase two. But I think what resonates with me is people have said, well, you had to send notice to people within 300 feet of this property. And so I do believe that the neighborhood extends beyond the boundaries of this development, because this is not an island. This development is not an island. It's a gated community, but it's still part of a larger neighborhood. So property owner rights, I'm really surprised that no one had brought this up. We have dealt with this in the past regarding views and whose obligation is it. And I believe that previous councils and I personally have said that no one owns the view. And we do have some language in our code that makes it really difficult, because trying to modify a project, move it one direction or the other, you are going to affect someone's views. And I can tell you, in my home in southern part of the city, there used to be strawberry fields on two sides of my home, and they built the La Serena subdivision. So I used to have a view to the foothills and a lot of other things that I really hoped would remain in perpetuity. And I just have a real problem when someone asks me to deny someone a right to improve their property. And the reason you do that is to preserve their views. We have an obligation to preserve views from public corridors. So previous councils, and I still agree with that. So, and then I did want to say, while the argument of no family goes fast enough to have to expand their home this much, I think we can all agree that times have changed. Land values have changed. The families' needs have changed. And so we saw this with the project on Parkview and in other areas. So no disrespect to the Planning Commission, because I think they did a really good job in vetting this issue. And I just believe that if they had been given guidance to expand the neighborhood to include properties along Ocean View and 6th, that I think their decision would have been different. So those are my comments. And so at this point, is someone prepared to make a motion, or someone want to have more discussion?
I'd like to respond a little bit to some of those things. And I think if we're looking at the city's guidelines on this, we're saying that it doesn't substantially or needlessly restrict views. And I don't actually have an answer to whether it's substantial, but I think that on that level, that size, almost tripling the size of a home, is needlessly could be called into question in that one. And in terms of neighborhood, the unfortunate thing about all of this, particularly for the Planning Commission, is that we have to make judgment calls, especially the Planning Commission. And in this case, I think just because the way the neighborhoods have been designed and raised up, in my opinion, and my judgment call is that it's not compatible in scale with that particular part of the neighborhood and with the way the whole I think subdivision is probably a confusing term to use here, but the whole development was designed. So I don't have a conflict with making those findings. And again, it's a judgment call. But I think that I don't believe that we're going against the city's land use element in making that call in this case, but I might not make the same call in another case where neighborhoods are different.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to get into the substantially or needlessly standard.
Right, that's a judgment call.
Okay. Any other discussion? Commissioner Mona?
You know, my only thought is it's interesting that we are talking about this neighborhood like it's something very different and special from the rest of the city. I really take offense at that. I live in just a really nice, what I would call a nice section of Grover Beach, where there are houses that are different sizes and different colors and different styles. And that, I think, is very important to take into consideration here. When you start making one neighborhood better than another, that is an extremely wrong thing to do. And I think it's not good to base a decision on that. So I actually, if we're ready to, I make a movement that we we do not accept the denial by the Planning Commission. We reverse that and allow the homeowners at 828 North 5th Street to go along with their planned construction.
Really, I think, would be the wrong approach for us. The fact that we, according to our city attorney, cannot, we don't have any authorization to enforce any of the CCNRs and so on and so on. Being a planning commissioner for many years myself, I really was very adverse to overturning a planning commission decision. However, I feel that at this point in time, with the information that I have in front of me, that I can support this that motion.
Okay. Any other discussion on the motion? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes. That concludes this item before the council. Let's take a 10-minute break. Race for 234 Taxi LLC. Chief Copsey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. You have before you a request to increase the pickup charge for 234 Taxi from $3 to $4. The city council granted a certificate of public convenience to 234 Taxi on November 5th, 2007. The last request for rate change was by the owner in April of 2008, where the council authorized a per-mile rate increase from $3 to $3.50 and a $4 convenience fee. However, convenience fees for credit card payments can no longer be charged. 234 Taxi submitted a request for rate change that calls for service. The request is to increase their flag drop or pickup charge to $4 for customers. Any modifications to their rate changes must come before the council per our city code, which is also attached. Current rates for the taxi companies in our area are attached. And I also was informed that last month the city of San Luis Obispo approved rate changes for both the companies that are authorized to operate in our city, including 234 Taxi. They authorized the fare pickup to be increased to $4, as well as for Tri-Counties Transit and doing business as a number of other names, for their fare mile to be increased to $3.50. They still have yet to come to us for them, but 234 Taxi has brought the request. At this point, staff is recommending that City Council consider public testimony, if any, and adopt the resolution amending the master fee schedule, authorizing the rate change for 234 Taxi to be increased from $3 to $4 for pickup.
Very good. Thank you, Chief.
Answer any questions?
Any questions, Chief?
Nope.
I do.
Councilman Molnar.
The rate change will just be for 234 Taxi, correct? Not for anyone else.
That's correct. Each taxi company must come before the council for any rate increases.
Okay. So that, and how does it change on our fee schedule then? On the master fee schedule, do we just we'll just We do it per company then, is that correct?
That's correct. As an Exhibit A is a master fee schedule. It is proposed that just their fare pickup will be going to $4. Everything else on there will stay the same.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is a public hearing. I'm going to open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address this item before the council? Seeing none, I'm going to close to bring it back. Any additional discussion or someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll move.
Let's go then.
I'll move that we adopt the resolution which modifies the rate for 234 Taxi LLC and, well, just modifies the pickup fee.
Okay.
I'll second that.
There's a motion and a second, and I believe that is consistent with the staff recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. Nope. Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Okay, moving on to item number four. This is consideration of authorizing a change in franchise grantee from Charter Communications to CCO SoCal. Is that one? LLC.
It's a mouthful.
It is. City Attorney.
I'm just going to call them the new guys. No. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. This item is before you for consideration of adoption of a resolution. The resolution is a mechanism by which an amendment to the franchise agreement can be made. In 1998, Charter Communications Properties was awarded a franchise to operate Properties LLC to CCO SoCal One LLC. With that, I'll submit and happily answer any questions.
Thank you, City Attorney. Any questions?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Under the resolution, paragraph 3, down at the bottom, it says that the community being Grover Beach, further authorizes SoCal, I'll say just say Coast SoCal 1, to assign or transfer its assets, including the franchise, to a parent or affiliate of CCO SoCal 1, or to assign or pledge or otherwise grant or convey one or more liens of security interest in its assets, including et cetera, and to the franchise and the cable system to goes on to any lender and so forth. I'm not sure, do I understand that if we grant this request, then SoCal One could, according to this paragraph, they could transfer this to any other organization, such as any other parent or affiliate of SoCal One, and assign, pledge, or otherwise grant or convey one or more liens of security interest and so forth. Are we losing our ability to control this? Do they, if we grant this under this resolution, and they decide they want to change again, they don't have to come back and ask for permission?
Let me see if I can. There's a two-part question to this. The second part, which is the easy part, is basically by granting this, we're allowing them to issue liens against what they own, and that is consistent with the franchise. In other words, if they want to encumber their ownership,
yeah, okay,
they can do that. The first part, a little more difficult. What the language says is they can transfer or assign within their own structure any affiliate or parent corporation of their own. And they can't go outside, like Charter Communication Properties is going outside of their corporate structure to assign to a new legal entity. They would still have to return and do the same thing. This resolution would allow them to transfer the franchise within their corporate structure.
Okay, but right now, Charter Communications is going outside of their structure.
That is correct.
Do you have any idea why that's happening?
I know that Charter Communications has been going through some reorganization resulting from financial situations, is my understanding, but that's all that I know, and perhaps Ms. Ludovici can answer that with greater clarity.
Okay, so hang on a sec. Was that it?
That answers that, yes.
No other questions?
Well, the other question I had is in the letter from Charter, the June 15th letter, second paragraph also states, we do not expect that there will be any changes to the operations or management of your franchise or the local cable system as a result of the transfer. That doesn't mean that there won't be. It just sort of says we don't expect any. I've seen corporations go through this before, and they've made statements, we don't expect any changes, and all of a sudden the whole thing turns upside down, and maybe the service goes to south on you. I don't know.
Would you like me to respond, Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem? Yes.
Yes.
I think that, one, that is correct. The statement accurately identified by you does not guarantee, promise, or bind, but neither does the current ownership. In other words, if Charter Communications wish to completely change their structure or turn operations in a different direction, they would not be precluded from doing that under the franchise, so long as, and this is the kicker, that the operation and what is being provided to the public and to the residents of the Grover Beach is consistent with the provisions of the charter, and that's where the city has control over it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I have a couple questions.
Okay. Go ahead.
So this does not preclude other companies from operating cable within our city. Is that correct? Other people can do cable? This is not exclusive?
It is. And I off the top of my head, or recollecting the franchise agreement, there is no exclusive provision in it. If there is one, I can't come up with and I can provide you with that answer at either, if you want to recess, I can go look it up. But I'm not aware of any exclusivity provisions in the franchise agreement.
And so this is it. So basically, agreeing to this is not really agreeing to let Charter do business here, because we've already done that. It's agreeing for Charter to make an internal change.
It's actually agreeing for another company to take over Charter and assume the franchise agreement, assume Charter's position in the franchise agreement from Charter Communication.
You are correct. The council member is correct in saying that we do not have an exclusive agreement with the City of Grover Beach. Other cable operators could come in, absolutely, and offer service if they chose to. And this does not change that at all. Are there any other questions I can answer for you?
Any other questions?
No.
What happens if we don't do it?
Perhaps the city attorney would like to address that.
City attorney?
The provisions of the franchise agreement state that a request for an assignment cannot be unreasonably withheld. You would have to have evidence in front of you and make findings which would support a decision of denial. And that decision would obviously be reviewable by a court.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Is there anyone else that would like to address this item before the council? Okay, seeing then, I'm going to close it, bring it back. Any additional discussion, or someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I am.
Okay. Councilmember Wright.
I make a motion that the City Council adopt the resolution granting the requested transfer of the franchise.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. There's no additional discussion. Roll call.
Yes.
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 I'm going to abstain.
Yes. So motion carries. So let's move on to item number 5. And this is an introduction and first reading of ordinance regarding continuation of the redevelopment agency. City Manager Peralt.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you'll recall, during our last meeting, I updated you relative to the new state laws, AB1X26 and AB1X27, which were enacted as part of the state budget's resolution last month. And AB1X26 essentially dissolves the redevelopment agency and outlines the procedures for that dissolution. And AB1X27 is a voluntary authorization to reestablish the agency with the introduction of an ordinance that would require the city to make payments to a state tax allocation fund. essentially those payments would be due in January and May of next year. As you'll recall as well, we discussed at length the advantages and disadvantages of taking this action. It's true you have until October 1st as a deadline to complete whether you choose or choose not to reestablish, but the recommendation of the Community Redevelopment Association as well as the League of California Cities is to go ahead and introduce the ordinance to reestablish the agencies as soon as possible, as long as you're able to at least indicate that you'll be able to make that payment. And they make that recommendation for a couple of reasons. One, it'll allow you to continue to operate and collect, increment, and do the project redevelopment, project improvements that we've been seeing for the last couple of years. We'll be able to continue that. As you know, the League of California Cities and CRA have filed a lawsuit, and we're actually expecting the Superior, and that lawsuit was filed with the State Supreme Court. We're expecting a decision on whether that will be stayed or not within the next 2 weeks. The staying the recommendation of the League and the CRA is regardless of what kind of a stay is issued. We won't know that for a couple of weeks at least. They would still recommend, and I agree, that the introducing the ordinance probably protects the city's interests because it will allow you, as I've indicated, to continue to collect and dispense increment. If you choose not to do that, then there are all sorts of requirements we then have to begin dealing with as far as the dissolution of those of the agency, and that would be contrary, at least in my mind, to the direction that the state or the city has wanted to go with redevelopment. I might add that even if there was a stay, what might occur is, number one, we don't have to make those payments until January and May of next year. And secondly, even if the stay is in place, remains in place, it's quite likely that we could impound those funds in such a way that they'd be protected from actually giving them outright.
Off on that, as they don't want to give the state the idea and or the court the idea that cities are going to go ahead with redevelopment agency and pay these fees anyway. So I believe they, if I'm not mistaken, Dave Mullinex requested that we hold off on this.
You know, I don't recall having seen that communication myself. I don't deny that. All I can tell you is what I've been updated with in terms of the CRA and my review of the minutes thus far. My suggestion would be that you go ahead and introduce the item. Obviously, it isn't finalized until you take second action, which wouldn't occur for another 2 weeks.
I concur, and that was the other part of my comment. I was going to suggest that the recommended action by staff says that we go ahead and introduce the first reading and to schedule the public hearing for the second reading for the August 15 meeting. We don't have to have the second reading as of August 15, do we? Can't we put that off for a considerable length? And is there a time limitation on how long we could put that off, waiting for the Supreme Court to come back with some sort of a decision that will give the League and us the direction that they think we ought to go?
Ultimately, you have at least until October 1st to make that decision. However, if you don't make that decision, and ultimately it depends on the way the stays work, but if we're left with having to dissolve the agency, we'd have to begin taking some action very quickly, in fact, by the end of April, I mean the end of August. So that's why my suggestion is that you at least go ahead, introduce the item, set it for the 15th of August, because we would likely, you can always delay it at that point if you're still needing to know what way the stay is going to indicate we should go. But that way we would also not lose time in reactivating the agency and be able to put programs back in place as they were intended in the budget.
Well, then the other question I have is, Mr. Kozanowicz, if the Supreme Court grants the stay, will that allow us to continue with the redevelopment agency, or will what will the stay, have you any idea how that will come down?
I don't have a crystal ball. In other words, there are several options that will be available to the Supreme Court if they decide to issue a stay. If a complete stay is issued, it basically means that the law that was adopted is no longer in effect, which means that whatever was in place before this bill was signed is the current law. That decision by the Supreme Court to issue that stay would have to be balanced with then assuming at the end of the day that the law is upheld, that it's found to be constitutional. How do we deal with that? When you lift the stay, do you start the clock over and everybody gets to do what we're doing right now? In other words, for the period of the stay, and that would be a logical step. In other words, if the stay is issued 2 months into the effectiveness of the law, and if the decision comes down from the Supreme Court at the end of the day that the law was constitutional, then what would make sense is to perhaps restart that clock and put everybody back on that schedule. Bigger question is, agencies will be continuing to operate and do business in that period of time. What happens with the obligations and the money and everything else that would take place in that period of 3, 4, 5, 6 months, who knows how long. And I'm not smart enough to figure that part out. That's why they're the Supreme Court justices, and I'm not. But there are a lot of very, very complicated, all kidding aside, seriously speaking, there are some very, very complicated legal issues and practical issues that everybody's going to need to look at and make a decision in making a decision on whether a stay is issued, what happens if it's issued, how extensive it is, what does it mean. It could be simply a freeze, and that is that nobody does anything for that period of time. So I don't have a better answer than that for you, Mayor Pro Tem. If you have any more specific questions, I'll try to answer them. But
the only other thought I had was, in the filing of the request for a stay, do they be specific in their request, or do they kind of leave that up to the justices to make a decision as to how they want to grant it?
Well, the request for the stay was to invalidate the law and basically stop the effectiveness of the law. How that's done, how that's going to, you know, that will be probably part of the dilemma that they'll struggle with.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
So if I can just add a little bit, considering and are considering a bond issue, and it sounds like the bond council is really the one that would have to be convinced to allow us to move forward. I mean, what is, and I'm asking for a crystal ball. No worries. I think you know where I'm going with this, though.
Thank you. Mayor, council members, this one is actually a little bit easier because a bond council basically needs to issue an unqualified opinion about the validity and the ability of the city to issue or the agency to issue the bonds. It would be difficult for me to envision how, if I were put in that place, I could do that, knowing that there is a Supreme Court case pending that will decide whether or not redevelopment agencies are in place or whether they've been dissolved by that law, even though there is a stay in place. Because that stay simply says that until we decide, this is the status quo, but it doesn't say how we're going to decide or when we're going to decide. Okay. So it would be difficult for bond counsel to issue an unqualified opinion that the issuance of the bonds is legal and within the power of the agency.
Okay. So for Grover Beach, a stay has very little benefit. It would only be if it's a stay and then there is a ruling that basically finds AB 1X26
unconstitutional. And I think that our situation is very large to the city and to the agency, in a big picture, everybody is in that position. And the Supreme Court is aware of that. The justices know that this is an issue that has to be resolved as quickly as possible. But at the same time, I think they know that it's a very complicated issue. So I foresee a expeditious decision. But whether that means 2 months, 3 months, or six, I don't know.
Okay. So I'm going to finish asking my questions, and I'm going to go to my colleagues since I've kind of jumped in here. I'm a little break in form, sorry. I just want to get clarification on when an ordinance would go into effect, because traditionally and typically you have a first reading followed by a second reading, which is maybe, let's say, 2 weeks, and then there's 30 days before it goes into effect. Is that the case here, or is it upon the approval of a second reading of the ordinance?
My reading of the language of AB 1X27 is that upon second reading and adoption, the ordinance has been enacted, and the law says it has to be enacted by October 1st.
Okay.
It doesn't say it has to be in effect.
Gotcha.
And that is the distinction that I'm drawing.
Gotcha. Okay. So we do have some time, as you were alluding to.
Yeah.
So then the last comment or question that I had, and I talked with the city manager earlier, and I have to admit I had not even considered this as a possibility. But in effect, if the Supreme Court rules and they say that AB 1X26, which dissolves RDA, is constitutional, and then they find that AB 1X27 is not, ball game's over, correct?
Could be.
If AB 26 is found to be constitutionally sound and not illegal in any other manner, and AB 27, which is the continuation payment or continuation bill, is found to be unconstitutional or in violation of Prop 22, then the effect is that the law of AB 26 would be in effect. Now, there is some language that says that these two are joint at the hip, and I can't quote it to you, but I know that there's a language in one of the two of them or in the enabling legislation that says that, you know, if one doesn't exist, the other one doesn't either. So I think there may be a saving grace. But again, in other words, if one of them gets knocked out, they both get knocked out. But I am not legally clear on that, so I don't want to state that with any certainty.
So maybe do a little research and come back with
absolutely.
Thank you. Okay. Councilmember Mona.
Okay. So then vice versa, if so you're saying if AB 26 is considered unconstitutional, then 27 would follow, but if 26 is passed, then 27 should follow?
No, I think that the if 26 dissolves the redevelopment agencies, 27 allows the agency to be reinstated if it wishes to make a payment.
Right.
If 26 is found to be legally sound, dissolving the redevelopment agencies, and 27 is found to be constitutionally flawed because it's in violation of Proposition 22, for example. Well, I think that what is being considered, and again, everybody should recognize that we are in completely uncharted territory. This is all, we're making this up as we go along. But what is being considered is in some manner protecting that money, because once it is paid to the state,
you'll never get it back.
And the Supreme Court finds that it is unconstitutional and the payment should not have been made, then it would be very difficult, I imagine, to receive that money back. Discussions have been all over the board, a consideration of making a payment actually to the court. There is in a lower court, there is a way of lodging money with the court, that money that is in dispute. And then the clerk holds it, not really, but basically that's what happens. The clerk of the court is the custodian of the money until the dispute is resolved. So there are ways of trying to deal with that problem. What this ordinance, proposed ordinance, says is basically that if any payment is actually made, it would be made under protest and with a reservation of rights of being able to protect it and recover it. What is being considered across the board is a mechanism by which that payment could be made. If, for example, a stay is not issued, then a Supreme Court doesn't make a decision by January.
Because that's when it's due, is January.
The first half of it is due in January.
Okay.
In that event, we would obviously look at every possible way of complying with our intent to pay and complying with the payment, but at the same time trying to make sure that in the event that the Supreme Court finds in the favor of CRA and basically abolishes the two bills, that money would still be retrievable.
Okay. Thank you. Then I have a question. I wasn't here for the budget last meeting. Is that money figured into the budget?
Not at this time. And when we reviewed it with the council at the last meeting, we indicated that in terms of we had identified possible sources for funding, which would include utilizing the housing fund allocation and also using reserve funds either from the general fund or the sewer fund to make a single year's allocation in our housing fund is about $280,000. But we also indicated that at this time we wouldn't recommend making those budgeted adjustments until we got a little closer to the actual payment date, and then you would still have the ability to make those adjustments at that point.
Is the entire amount due in January, or do we have a partial payment?
No, it's split in two, in January and in May.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, there's so many things running in my head. Councilmember Peterson.
No questions.
Councilmember Bright?
I have one. In reference to the ordinance, the eighth paragraph, where it references the Alternative Voluntary Redevelopment Program, is that the $88,000 or thereabouts that's required every year thereafter?
I think that name is applied to the ransom payment at large. I think it's AB 27 is called the Alternative Voluntary Redevelopment Program.
The $380 goes to the county auditor?
That is probably their collection.
That's their collection point.
That is essentially they have used the auditor every time they've taken money from us the last 15 years.
I just thought that was kind of interesting that it would go to the county auditor first. Okay. That was my question. Thank you.
Your turn.
Well, I mean, obviously the item before us is a first reading and trying to keep all our options open, but I just can't. I'm compelled to try and ask this question and kind of work through the math, because this whole thing of AB 1126 being upheld constitutionally and 27 not means that
we're sunk.
Yeah. Redevelopment goes away. The state doesn't necessarily get the $1.7 billion bump right away, per se, but they will obviously collect probably more down line. I don't know. Maybe that's something that's an exercise I can do at home. I'm sorry. I'm just, there's a lot of things running through because that really brings a jeopardy in play. And I'm just wondering if maybe you continue doing the research and find out from the league and the RDA. I mean, I'm just really trying to break through the risk assessment and the benefit of this.
If the council is agreeable on a date when the second reading and adoption would be considered, that should be included in the motion.
Yeah, and at that time, if we don't have, we may be able to continue that.
Shall we go ahead with the August 15 date as recommended by staff?
That's a good motion.
Okay. I have a question. Did we read this, or do we have to read it?
No, you can introduce by title only.
It's an introduction by title only. The recommendation is we introduce the ordinance by title only, conduct the first reading by title only, open a public hearing, and schedule a second reading and an adoption hearing for a date certain.
Okay. Okay, and at the second reading, do we actually read it?
No. So you have read it. It is part of public record.
Yeah.
It was available for the public, and so we are taking action just to introduce it.
In the motion, that's why the staff recommends, and that is in the staff report, is that the council also acts on the reading by title only, and that's combined in the motion.
All right. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay. So there was a motion.
I may repeat the motion, that we introduce the ordinance by title only, and after conducting a public hearing, schedule the second reading and adoption of the ordinance for the City Council meeting of August 15, 2011.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. I think Councilmember Peterson seconded that. And I think I need a roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, moving on to our consent agenda. This is item... the consent agenda is typically when we take routine items as a group, and we have, looks like, four items on consent tonight. Item 6 is the Treasury Report for the period of July 13th through the 28th, 2011. Item 7 is minutes of the City Council meeting of Tuesday, July 5th, 2011. Item 8 is consideration of a resolution which is revising the early retirement incentive program. And then item 9 is authorization to send a letter of opposition regarding SB 588. Do any members of the council want to remove any items from the consent agenda?
No.
I have no requests from the public on this item, so I'll accept a motion.
I move that we accept item 629.
Second the motion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. So let's move to regular business. This is item number 10, and this is consideration of appointment to the Park Recreation and Beautification Commission.
Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. Kathy Petker, Parks and Recreation Director. There's currently one scheduled vacancy on the commission, and that expired on May 31st, 2011. The city staff from City Management Department had advertised the position in press releases with the local newspapers, on our website, our government channel 20, and also posted notices at the City Hall and post office post boards. At the end of last month, we only received one application from our current Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission Chair, Mr. Jeff Lee, and he has continued to serve on the commission until the City Council determines what to do with the vacancy. No interview was completed by the Advisory Board Screening Committee, and since Mr. Lee was the only applicant and he has been serving, it is recommended that he continue to be appointed to the Commission for his term to expire on May 31st, 2015. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Mr. Lee is in the audience this evening as well.
So and Mr. Lee actually showed up to the meetings in June and July after his term expired?
Yes.
That was mean.
Graciously.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
No.
Okay. This is a business meeting, and I am not going to open this up to the public, so I'll accept a motion on this item.
I will make a motion that we adopt the resolution appointing Jeff Lee to a four-year term on the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission, scheduled to expire on May 31st, 2015.
I'll second that with a thank you to Jeff for serving again.
Absolutely.
There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes, so I would like to introduce Mr. Jeff Lee to the not only the council, but to the community that's watching at home. So, Jeff, do you have any comments?
Just thank you for the opportunity to re-serve and to be part of the commission. One of the things I like about the Parks, Rec, and Beautification Commission is it's the feel-good committee for the city. There's a lot of good things happening in the community, and we like to present that and really appreciate the volunteers that come forward to help us. And
releases and local newspapers and city notices on the city's website. We've done that since May. By the end of July, we had only one application, and that is from Mr. Chris Long. It is his term that had expired. Mr. Chris Long, in similar fashion, had agreed to serve until a replacement could be found. Again, since we had the only one applicant, we did not bother to schedule a review committee meeting, but are presenting Mr. Long's application for your review and approval at this point. As you know, Mr. Long is in the audience, so staff is recommending that that the council reappoint Mr. Long to a new term.
Very good. And I probably should say, in the spirit of full disclosure, with respect to Mr. Lee and Mr. Long, that staff had approached me and asked me about whether we appoint them or whether we go through a protracted interview. And so I think we made the right decision, hopefully. So any questions of staff?
Nope.
Okay. Again, this is a business item. I'm not going to open this up to the public. I'm prepared to accept the motion on this item.
I move that we adopt the resolution appointing Chris Long to a four-year term on the Planning Commission, scheduled to expire on May 31st, 2015.
I second that.
There's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. So let me introduce Chris Long. And Chris, would you like to make some comment? Great.
Thank you for the reappointment. I guess Mr. Lee and I are gluttons for punishment. In all seriousness, it's been a pleasure to serve, and thank you for the reappointment.
Well, join the club. Thank you so much for your, and after the earlier item, thank you for agreeing to continue serving, Chris. We really appreciate your time, your expertise, and your knowledge that you bring to the commission. So, anyway.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item number 12. This is a water shortage contingency plan stage of action, and I believe Public Works Director and City Engineer Ray is going to give this report.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. The California State Urban Water Management Planning Act requires that a water purveyor, in this case the City of Grover Beach, adopt a water shortage contingency plan and update that plan basically every 5 years. Just recently in June, we adopted an updated water shortage contingency, or urban water management plan rather, and that included an updated water shortage contingency plan. That plan, I'll look at my notes here. The contingency plan basically is a set of actions that the water purveyor needs to take in the case of a real or potential water shortage. Our current adopted plan includes five stages of action. Basically, a stage one includes some voluntary actions. It's essentially a reminder that we have a, you know, potential water shortage condition, and that we're not quite out of the drought yet, or we're just starting into a drought condition maybe. All the way up to a stage four, which is a severe water shortage stage of action. It means we're in a severe water shortage. Maybe we've had a damage to one of our water supplies. And that stage of action includes fairly significant mandatory water conservation measures. Looking through a stage five is really the final stage of action, and that would cancel a declaration of a water shortage emergency or water shortage. The only real difference between the new updated contingency plan and that plan, which was adopted in 2005, is a difference in the way that a water shortage declaration essentially is eliminated over time. For example, if you were to start with if you were currently in a stage three action, if you had good water years, you'd slowly step down to stage two, stage one, and ultimately you'd eliminate that. Well, in 2005, the way that a water shortage declaration was calculated, a single good water year in the middle of a drought could mean you're done. You no longer have a water shortage emergency. The updated plan basically takes a running average starting with the first year. You have a rainfall that falls below 65% of the 20-inch rainfall benchmark. So you start with, in our case, 2007, the first water year, we fell below 65%. Each year thereafter, a 5 plan and this updated plan, it takes a lot longer with a running average to come back up to 100%. Each year you have more than the benchmark or even the benchmark itself, you're averaging back with these lower years, and it just takes time to crawl back up to, you know, what you'd call 100% condition. You know, that makes great sense. The groundwater basin's not going to be replenished in 1 year. It's not going to be replenished probably in 2 years. It'll take 3-4 years as we move along. There's a couple other factors that were added into the updated plan. That includes we look at groundwater levels in our city's wells. We look at the level of water in Lopez, behind Lopez Dam. And we look at our annual water report that we're doing as part of the NCMA, Northern City Management Area. And we look for any indication of seawater intrusion that's identified in that report. So looking at all those elements, where we find ourselves tonight is a recommended action that council adopt a resolution identifying a Stage 1 water shortage declaration, which is basically a minor declaration, gentle reminder, conserve water. And we would continue on with some of the current voluntary water shortage contingency actions that we have, water conservation, such as the Cash for Grass program, the washing machine program. We have a fixture retrofit program, and we have flyers available at the counter. We're constantly sending out flyers. We have flyers at Miner's Hardware regarding water conservation. So that is essentially concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Director Ray. Any questions of staff? Councilmember Mona?
So under this new system that we have, we were currently in a Stage 2 but previously. What is the difference between Stage 1 and 2 now, or Stage 2 was part of the old program?
No, we have the stages really haven't changed. I mean, those between the 2005 plan and the updated plan, the stages of action and the actions recommended in each stage really haven't changed. The difference between a 1 and 2, a 2 is considered to be a moderate water shortage condition. It's still voluntary measures, basically the same. It's just a little bit of a heightened level of concern.
All right, thank you.
Stage 3 is really where you start taking off into mandatory requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions? Any questions outside?
No questions.
Great. My staff report.
Was a good staff report.
This is a business item. I am not going to open this up to the public, so.
I move that we, City Council, adopt the resolution declaring a Stage 1 water shortage condition.
I second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Let's see, moving on. We have no pool consent agenda items tonight. And then what I'm going to do is recess the regular City Council meeting. And then I'm going to call to order our joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting for Monday, August 1st, 2011. So, Donna, when you are ready, we'll do roll call.
Here.
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 Mayor
and Chair
Schultz.
Here. Thank you, Donna.
Public Communications, is there any member of the public that would like to address the Joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting tonight? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back. Let's go into the City Council Improvement Agency business. This is item CCIA1, consideration of resolutions approving revisions to the fiscal year 11-12 biennial budget. City Manager, Executive Director Peralt.
Mr. Mayor, Chair, members of the board, as you recall, we're in the middle of a two-year budget cycle. The original two-year budget was adopted in June of 2010. We had gone before the council and the agency board made presentations regarding the recommended revisions on May 24th and again on June 6th and finally on July 18th. During the July 18th presentation, the focus was primarily on the general fund, and final direction was received in terms of resolving the deficit in the general fund. And as pointed out in the staff report, the remaining recommendations and directions that staff received. At that time, we were aware that we had the $310,000 worth of concessions from the employees. And as I mentioned earlier, that was combined with a reduction in the contribution to the Street Rehabilitation Fund by $120,000. It included the Chamber of Commerce in the $25,000 level out of the agency. Should clarify that there's another $15,000 in the general fund that is on a reimbursement basis for two special events. One of those is the Stone Soup, which is coming up very shortly. That agreement is also currently under review by your subcommittee. The other part of this was a splitting of an allocation or reducing allocations for the EVC from $7,500 to $4,000, and then allocating $4,000 in funding for the San Luis Obispo Visitors and Convention Bureau, with $25 being dedicated to the 2011 Savor the Central Coast event. All total, I just by way of note, we have a combined budget of slightly more than $15 million. And just by note again, by comparison, cities Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach both have larger general funds than our entire combined fund. So that just shows you how limited our resources are. Anyway, that concludes staff's report. I'm, what's that?
Yeah, let me take a piece.
Okay, yeah, the city attorney also wants to add something.
Okay, city attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and board members, specifically with regard to the redevelopment agency action. For the record, adoption of this budget is considered as an internal financing mechanism. It is not an appropriation of money or a commitment to spend that money. At this point in time, RDA is a redevelopment agency until and unless the resolution is adopted or ordinance is adopted, committing the city to the continuation payment. AB 26 precludes a redevelopment agency for assuming any new obligations. So by adopting this budget, you're simply, first of all, revising the budget that's already in place in existence, and secondly, you are not making a commitment of these funds. Each one of these appropriations or budgetary means will be subject to a separate agreement, which will come before you for deliberation and decision at the time when that decision can be made.
Okay. Question. Let's start to my right. Councilmember Bright, do you have any questions?
I don't have any at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I don't have questions of staff, but I have questions of my fellow council members.
Okay. Let's hold that. Councilmember Munar.
I have questions. Okay. You have $200,000 of city-owned property
right.
for sale. Will that be determined only towards the end of the budget cycle and after the mid, whether or not we need to do that?
No, my thinking, and with council's direction to review city properties, I would probably come back with a review of that listing in September, and then we'd get started on it again at that point.
Okay. The other question is, I'd like clarification for the $25,000 you give the chamber, and then you said it was an additional $14,000.
No, it was in addition to anything. That the total contract has consisted of $25,000 in the redevelopment agency and $15,000 out of the general fund. That's what the contract has been for some time. I only related to the general fund or to the redevelopment agency portion in this paragraph.
Okay. Well, what happens with the dissolution of the redevelopment agency? Are we still obligated to give them $25,000?
It's a little bit different here than this is not a new obligation, and you're allowed to continue with existing obligations that you're under contract for. You're just prevented from taking on any new obligations. If you were going to enter into additional funding for the chamber, for instance, you would probably, that would be something that would have to wait. But to continue at the same funding level when you have an existing contract is appropriate.
And how long is that contract for?
It has a annual rollover clause.
Okay, so then we would discuss it again for the next for next July, correct? And what do we get for the $25,000?
The contract has a couple of different components. The primary one is the operation of the visitor center right now on a regular and ongoing basis. And then they also have some economic development services that are identified in the contract that they provide to us. For us on an ongoing basis.
All right, thank you.
And that contract will be brought to the council, full council for...
Members sat on the board, where they have voting rights or just advisory rights?
Voting rights is, mm-hmm. as we've discussed, yes.
All right, thank
Mr.
you.
Mayor, I should indicate that along with that, there is a current provision in the current agreement, and also in the preliminary discussions we've had, they have indicated that they'll do an annual report to the agency board.
Oh, thank you for that update.
All right, thank you.
Okay. So, Bob, I'm going to ask you regarding the, because as you know, the subcommittee had talked about it, and I agree with the way it's been budgeted, but not necessarily appropriated yet. But I do have a question regarding timing of Stone Soup, because I know that's moving forward. I think there may have been an invoice or something submitted.
That's correct. We're under obligation at the present time to pay reimbursement for those costs, or actually pay that $7,500 sponsorship, if you will. Okay. And I believe that invoice for this year has already been processed.
Okay. And then there has no a second event has not been identified.
There is no second event at this time.
Okay. Very good. So let's see. This is a business item, but I am going to open this up to the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close it, bring it back. So, Councilmember Peterson, you said you had a question of your colleagues.
I have a question of my colleagues. We had indicated that we wanted to provide $4,000 to the EVC, the Economic Vitality Corporation, and $4,000 to the Visitor and Convention Bureau. I sit on both boards, and the two boards have been working very closely in conjunction with one another. The Visitor and Convention Bureau has really ramped up their tourism outreach, and in fact, this last year, our stats are much, much better. Our stats are showing for the county that I believe our tourism dollars have increased 11.5%, which is significantly higher than our neighboring counties. And certainly last year it was significantly lower. So I think they're really moving in the right direction, and the two committees or the two organizations are working very closely together on that, which is as it should be. We've been invoiced $4,400 as our contribution, basically, we're told for the Visitor Convention Bureau to go forward, everybody has to pay their pro rata amount. And we also have indicated that we want to spend $2,500 on the Savor the Central Coast event. So that means that what we're really looking for to promote tourism in our area is $6,900 needed. And on the other hand, the Economic Vitality Corporation has indicated that it really doesn't make or break them if people don't make their full payment. Now, if nobody made their full payment, it probably would make or break them. But it's not going to affect our participation. It's not going to affect how we do business together. So I'm wondering, and I know Mayor Scholes may have some other thoughts on this, but I'm wondering if it would be possible to adjust that $8,000 to allocate $6,900 for the VCB and just this year $1,100 for the EVC.
Are we benefiting from any of this?
In my opinion, we are, yes.
Councilman Bright, you want to respond on the question of benefit?
Absolutely we benefit. I'm saying from EDC, I believe that we do from both agencies. I don't know.
Have we seen an increase in sales tax or DOT or anything based upon this?
Well,
one of the benefits from the EVC directly is they have worked collaboratively with us in a couple of different things. One, they helped us sponsor a business seminar last year where we actually came in, opened it up to any business in the city, and brought some professionals in that could do some business planning and consulting. And that was done through the EVC. The other thing that is, the EVC has done local loans.
Small business loans.
Small business
right.
loans. There's a handful of them here in the city with businesses that have been supported. So EVC does that directly.
Yeah, and they've also given, recommended to potentially new businesses, Grover Beach. The one that pops out in my mind is the Camper Shell business that's near the corner of Grand and 16th, I want to say. So there has been a huge benefit from.
We get very good bang for our buck from both organizations.
So I would say I agree with that, and you had alluded to the fact that I thought that I might have a different thought process on this. My concern is that we go from funding the EVC at $7,500 down to $1,000. I mean, that's a pretty drastic reduction. So I'm just wondering, is it better for us to go forward and say, okay, fully funding the VCB at the $4,400, which is $400 more than we had, I think, previously given staff direction on, and then look at the Save of the Central Coast as a separate one-time special event? And so I was asking those questions regarding the chamber and their special events. And I know that even as part of the subcommittee, we've been talking about not funding special events, and maybe ultimately that is part of an economic development. But I'm thinking, is the timing such that we might be able to reduce that amount to the chamber, or use some of that money for the Save the Central Coast booth if everyone is still thinking we need to have a booth? So that was kind of a thought.
That's a good thought. I think it makes sense.
Then I have a question. So do we have in the budget, you talked about the $7,500 for the Stone Soup, but we also budgeted for another amount?
Because we are contractually obligated to do that. So there is another $7,500 in that budget that is unspecified at this point.
Okay, but we have nothing else committed with the chamber, so that money is set free? Is that what you're saying?
Well, at this point, it's ultimately up to the council.
And then it's also a matter of timing when you look at fiscal year. So if we're talking about $7,500 for Stone Soup, and then there's another event that, let's say, happens next May, then, you know, I know I'm being creative about this. Because really, if you budget it, and then it's a matter of when the obligations come. It's a matter of when you cut a check, and it's a matter of, you know, when they get that money up. But maybe not even to overly complicated. Maybe the discussion we really need to have is, one, do you fund VCB at the $4,400, leave the EVC at $4,000, and is the saver important enough, because it is a one-time expense, to find those dollars? And I just offered one possible suggestion. It may overcomplicate it, is that important enough? And do we give staff some direction to find $2,500 or $2,900 more dollars? I guess is really
Well, I have a question, if I may. So then the County Visitors and Conference Bureau is telling us what our contribution is to be?
And they've based it on TOT, and so they've used exactly the same formula for every city. So, for instance, the county is paying $100,000 or more. So we're paying, I think, about the least. I think we are paying the least. Ours is the smallest contribution.
So what if we said we can't do it? $4,000 is all we can do. Would we not be able to participate?
Maybe not. It would depend on the other members, whether they'd be willing to pay the full whack themselves and allow us to participate without paying it. We might not be able to.
That's interesting. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, but I understand the concept, but it kind of bugs a bit. Anywho, I think I need to. I need to hear from Debbie because she was really very instrumental in that Savor, the Central Coast event last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, can you give us an update on that? What's happening?
It's going very well. Ticket sales are significantly higher than they were last year at this time, which is critical. They've got hotels participating with more upfront packages for people to come to town. It's moving along very well. It is on budget. I think they'll bring it in at least at break even and maybe with a little extra this year. And the VCP has performed very, very, very well. And I think countywide people recognize that it's a very important event. One of the reasons I want to do it is because the city of Pismo Beach is having their Western Wine Awards at the pier. That's really what they're doing. I don't believe they're actually taking a booth, which leaves us, I don't want this to go out on TV, which leaves us free to really promote that we are the beach. And so I think it gives us a rare opportunity. Pismo Beach is looking the other direction for us to step in and say, we're the beach. And by the way, our parking's free. So from my point of view, it's very important to have our presence up there, and it's an opportunity to do it without the competition.
Okay. I have a question then. On that website, last time I saw it, they didn't...
And separated it out differently. So I'm thinking if we feel it's a beneficial organization at $4,400, it doesn't seem to be that big a stretch to get to from $4,000 to $4,400. Because there is value with the VCB. I think the majority of us agree with that.
To economic development. Tourism,
which is our number one priority.
I agree that there's value. It's just the methodology, mm-hmm. you know. But I do agree that there is value.
Okay. So was there a consensus to go from $4,000 to $4,400 for VCB?
I'd say yes.
Mayor?
I don't object to it.
Okay.
I'm good with that, of course.
I'm abstaining.
So then the other part is looking at the Savor, and Debbie, maybe you can kind of give us some clarification on this. I think previously we had talked about having a booth. So is there a commitment that we've made on the booth?
Well, we have made a commitment based on the council's decision to support it at $2,500. So I went ahead and said, yes, we'll take the booth. I believe there was one left and we got it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So staff, Bob, and I know the budget that's before us has monies budgeted for special activities, correct, or special events?
Yes, the general fund budget does.
So we could, the council feels that this is important enough, say that $2,500 of that shall go to the Savor of the Central Coast. And I think if we do that, then we write a letter and we say these are the things that we expect. And it's, you know, listing on the website and other things of that nature.
Yes.
So what does everyone think of that approach?
I guess if the funds are there. Otherwise, if they're not, I'd say then they'll have to come from our previous commitment or what we'd said we were going to do to EBC, and EBC would just have to be reduced.
Okay. And I think the other rationale behind this is Chamber, we know there's $25,000 that's set. That is from agency funds. But this year we're okay. Next year, all bets are off. So I think there's going to be some decisions coming down regarding redevelopment in the next couple of weeks that, in fact, could affect where we're going with the Chamber anyway. And so I think that may, those uncertainties give us a little flexibility without increasing our budget unnecessarily at this point. So I don't know if everyone followed that. Bob, you've been taking copious notes.
The direction that I've received is that we will go with the $4,400 out of the agency for the VCB, that in the general fund we will reduce the $7,500 for that second event to the Chamber by $2,500 and designate that for the Save of the Central Coast. I think just to keep the dollars in mind, you know, what I would recommend is that you reduce the EVC by the $400 that you're giving to, and that way we don't have to completely readopt
very
resolutions.
Good.
That's a thanks for that final piece.
Very good.
That's why he gets the big bucks. So, okay.
Do we need a motion for that?
Actually, I can take that direction in the final of the budget, but what you would just need to do then is adopt the resolutions as indicated in the recommendation.
Okay. So someone want to make that?
Well, I'll prepare
to make a motion.
We adopt the resolution of the City Council. We are the City Council. Adopt the resolution setting the fiscal year 12 appropriations limit from tax proceeds. And adopt the resolution. That's the City Council, is that right? Adopt
mm-hmm.
the resolution amending the fiscal year 12 budget.
I'll second and that. Are we doing this separately?
We're doing the improvement agency too at the same time, or do we have to do them separately?
Probably should do them separately.
Okay.
So this is just the
City Council.
City Council, correct?
Both resolutions in one motion.
You said do them separately.
Yeah, we're going to do them. There's two City Council resolutions.
A and B.
Attachment 1 and Attachment 2, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Wait. I have a question before we, if you don't mind.
Okay,
I was looking at the resolution here, as whereas the limit of Grover Beach was set at $8,100,000.
By formula, but actually you're well below it, yeah. Which is a good thing.
So, but we're hoping we'll bring in that much money, is that it?
No, it just establishes a ceiling that you cannot spend
beyond
formula.
So we're not raising the ceiling. We're not even close to the ceiling. We're about $1,000,000 below the ceiling.
Right.
All right, thank you. Okay. Sorry to interrupt, but that needed to be clarified.
No. That's a good question. Just make sure you got the information. Absolutely. So I believe Councilmember and Board Member Peterson had made you had a motion.
I did.
And that was regarding
the City Council
resolution, which is Attachment 1 and 2, correct? There was not a second. Was there
a second? Yes.
Okay. So Councilmember Wright seconded that. So let's do roll call.
Councilmember
Peterson?
Yes.
Councilmember
Bowman?
No.
Councilmember
Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor Schultz?
Yes. So then let's go to the Improvement Agency.
So I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution amending the fiscal year 12 budget.
Okay.
I'll second that.
There's a second motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Board Member Peterson?
Yes.
Board Member Bright?
Yes.
Board Member Mullen?
No.
Vice Chair Nichols?
Yes.
And Chair Schultz?
Yes. Okay, motion carries. And I believe that concludes our business under the Joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting. And I'm going to reconvene the regular City Council meeting for Monday, August 1st, 2011. And where we left off, it was Council Committee Report. So, Councilmember Bright.
I did have a committee meeting for the air pollution control district. There are some very interesting things going on there. a flag program that they are implementing at the school sites that are on or near the Mesa. The staff has requested a fee increase overall of 5.7%, somewhere in that vicinity, in order to recoup their the cost of doing business. Right now, they're at about an 80% level, and this will bring them up to about an 86 or 7% level of recouping their costs. That's pretty much the gist of our last meeting.
Okay. Thanks for that report. Councilmember Monar.
I was out of town.
That's right.
Councilmember Nichols was, Mayor Pro Tem, excuse me, was kind enough to go to Integrated Waste Management for me, and the Housing Trust there, we made decisions by email, which are not pertinent at this time. Though I will be sharing with the city manager on Wednesday my experiences in the Midwest and how they're dealing with their problems and helping to revitalize their downtowns.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Oh, we have council communication still, right?
Yeah, you still do. You still do. I got you down here. Okay.
The countywide 10-year plan, they now have scheduled a, what do you call it when you go off by yourself for
retreat.
Retreat. Thank you. I couldn't think of that. They have scheduled a retreat, which I will be attending. They're thinking that they're not making the progress they should be making, and they need to sit down and take a look at exactly what's happening and why they're not making more progress with the assistance of the homeless program. So that will take place probably towards the end of September. That's a tentative date on it right now. The sanitation district, the peer review is underway, and we should have the results of that, I believe, within 30 days. The peer review committee has been here, spent a day at the plant. We had a meeting with them, so I'm looking forward to the results of that. The Zone 3, well, the budget comes up at our next meeting on the sanitation district, which is Wednesday night. So we'll be approving the budget, most likely. And we have not had a Zone 3 advisory meeting for some time now.
Done?
Yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
Well, I had two meetings. One was with the Visitor and Convention Bureau, and I've reported on that in our budget discussion. And the other one was with the EBC, and they had a really nice event at the Niner Winery in Paso, and I unfortunately was working and couldn't attend. So,
struggling and in bad shape, not only financially but operationally, and he really worked with the board well and turned the organization around. We actually went away from having contracts with different transit providers and actually brought it in-house. So that's going to be a huge loss, and I think the board's going to be obviously going through the process of finding a new permanent transit manager. So I will keep you abreast of our ongoing search. Five Cities Fire Authority. Previously, the board had given a couple of directions, and the first was, in fact, to the fire chief and council was to look at possibly going from a joint powers authority to actually a special district. And so part of that has been researched with the Local Agency Formation Commission, and I believe they have completed that. And the other was to go forward. As part of that effort, you have to identify a funding source. And so we know the city's commitment to the Joint Powers Authority right now is about $1 million that comes from general fund. So the board had given direction to hire a consultant that would go out and do polling to gauge the interests of property owners with respect to whether it's a benefit assessment district or
a parcel tax. And so that effort is underway. And whenever that is complete and the board takes an action, I will report back to you. And then finally, the Beachfront Lodge, or the JA, which is between the city and the state, and I believe Pacifica, on the Beachfront Lodge, is meeting regularly, having regular conference calls. Items that to highlight for you tonight is that the Planning Commission on July 21st did recommend approval of the final EIR and the project design to the council. So that's something that will be coming to the council in the next month or two. There's still some things that the JA needs to work out before it comes to the council. So I will let you know when we have resolution, or that will just be coming to the city council, and then we can deliberate on that and make a decision. Okay? I don't think that was too long a report.
Nope.
That's all we have.
Okay. I have a question for
sure.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Oh.
The sanitation meets this week?
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night. Okay, because I was wondering about the progress of the policies and some of the issues that the surf riders had brought up, that there's been progress towards resolving some of those issues.
For example?
The relationship that Wallace has in terms of conflicts of interest and...
I had mentioned to you before that we have separated the contract between the Wallace Group Engineering and the administrator.
Okay.
That is still pending and coming before the board probably at our next meeting.
Okay, I thought it would be important that be noted for everyone
and
to know.
And will that include a response to the grand jury, or is that a different meeting?
The response to the grand jury, as I mentioned at the last meeting, is due on August 29th.
Okay.
And it is in the process. We have seen the initial draft and still working on it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Very good. So let's go to City Council member items, and this is item number 13. This is a selection of the voting delegate and alternate for the 2011 League of California Cities Annual Conference. City Manager.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you know, that traditionally you select a member and a alternate to attend the General Assembly at the annual meeting. The annual meeting is going to take place the third week in September. It's critical, as it always is, but you'll most likely be taking action on a variety of different resolutions relative, I would imagine, to state-city relationships. So it'll be a significant event to participate in. This year, three council members, the mayor and Mayor Pro Tem and Councilmember Peterson, have signed up to, at this point, to attend the conference. So my suggestion is that you select amongst the three one voting delegate and an alternate.
Okay.
In the past, we have selected our mayor as the delegate. Are you interested in doing that again?
Yeah, I would continue in doing that.
Okay.
I think we can do that, and then if the other two are willing to be alternates.
Yeah, I had a question about that.
Yes. The league will typically bring resolutions that may affect the city and things from the state. For example, there was a huge discussion when there was a resolution regarding, I think, SB 375, and I think there was another, because there was a resolution that several conservative, the Orange County and other conservative cities had come in and said they did not want to support that because they felt that the league board was not representing them. So those are the sort of things that we're voting on. Last year there probably was some discussion regarding redevelopment and things of that nature.
Will those items be available before you go?
They certainly will.
And we will be able to see them?
Yes, you certainly will.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And so if there is no legal reason not to have two alternates, I think that's a really good direction to go.
So I believe we had a motion and a second. Don't we need a roll call? We can do voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? None. Motion carries. All right. Let's go to council communications. And Councilmember Monar, that you sound like you had something.
I did. Actually, as I mentioned, I will be talking with the city manager about my vacation experience and what other cities are doing.
Well, what did you do for vacation? You went to other city councils?
No, but okay. I went and I spoke to people in cities about things that I noticed. I went to chambers. And
okay. All right.
I was in South Dakota, Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado.
Wow.
Okay.
That's a lot of territory.
Who'd be interested in Colorado? I don't know about North Dakota.
No, North Dakota. They had hail the size of golf balls, and we decided to go west and cancel North Dakota. Didn't want to have to deal with the liability of a rental car. Okay, but the other item is I did.
Sorry.
That's okay.
North Dakota.
I wasn't picking on North Dakota.
I have had communication with some residents expressing concern over the letters they received with the installation of the smart meters. And I just want to remind people that you still have an opportunity to delay installation. You can call 1-866-743-0263. You will have to have your account number with you, and the person doing the calling has to be the person who set up the account. And you will need to get a confirmation number, and that this needs to be posted on your house in the form of a statement saying that you are on the delay list. Thank you.
Do you have to give your firstborn?
Okay.
That's an alternate.
I'm okay. This discussion makes me uncomfortable. I would ask in the future if you're going to bring something up like that may result in a possible conflict for me, that you let me know ahead of time. That would be.
Oh, but we're not voting on this. It's just.
Well, I understand, but I want to make sure that there is no perception whatsoever that I was at the dais when there was a discussion on that matter.
Oh, I apologize.
That's okay.
I didn't realize
great.
That.
Thank you. You okay?
Yeah, I think so.
Great, thank you. Okay, Councilmember Peterson.
I don't have any council member items.
Mayor Pro Tem?
No.
Councilmember Bright?
No, thank you.
Hey, okay, I have one. I did want to say that I was at the Sizzling Summer Concert on Sunday. I think Councilmember Bright and Mayor Pro Tem was there. I've been 3 weeks in a row, and I tell you, the crowd continues to grow. I think we've had some of the largest crowds we've had in the. Someone said 10 years. I don't think it's been 10 years. I think it's been closer to maybe 7 or 8. But I mean, so it's a great opportunity to go out and enjoy free music on a Sunday, and we definitely want to support Park and Recs. And I think Jeff Lee talked about Park Rec and Beautification being, he used a term that I forgot, but it really is, when we talk about community spirit.
Feel good commission.
Yeah, he said feel good, but I think it's more community spirit. I think it's really something that they do very well. So I did want to give them kudos and then encourage anyone who is at home watching, in addition to my other colleagues, to feel free to come down every Sunday, I think, from 3 to 6, and I think this goes up until maybe the second or third weekend in September.
I think it's all the way to the end of September.
Okay.
Actually.
That's
yeah,
a good
I saw people
music.
There. I mean, I met people there from Los Osos, from Arroyo Grande, Napomo, and people come specifically to Grover Beach.
Absolutely.
For these concerts.
And they always say Grover Beach is the most fun of all the concert series.
They say they're the best music, too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, let's see. City manager, you have any reports or comments tonight?
No, sir.
City attorney?
None tonight, thank you.
Okay. We have no closed session items tonight. And so, with that, it's 10 p.m. We are adjourned.
Putting time.